Hi everyone, Shelly here. I am so excited because today I'm going to be guiding you through your introduction to the Yoga Sutras. Really amazing resource, amazing book for yogis and philosophers and spiritual people alike. You have probably read this book before, maybe read it multiple times, and I think that the great thing about that is you learn something new every time you read it. So hopefully you'll gain something new from this if you've been through this text before. And yeah, I'm just really excited to guide you through it. So I've created a PowerPoint for this exercise we'll be going through, just an introduction today. So I'm going to share my screen and walk you through that. Okay. So here we are with the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. We are working with the version that is translated by Sri Swami Sachidananda. If you have a different version, that's totally okay. Sometimes it can be really interesting to compare different interpretations because even one different translation can really change the meaning of a sutra, and that can be just an interesting point of reflection and make you think about it a different way. So, but hopefully you do have this version or you're familiar with it at least. And we're going to be going through just the introduction today, just to kind of review what this book is about and what the point of learning it is. So kind of just to go over, you know, the purpose of this, because I think every time we learn something, it's important to have context, right? So our lesson overview and our learning objective, what is the point of this? So for me, teaching this to you and guiding you through it, my goal is to give you a deeper and more nuanced understanding of the sutras and kind of appreciate them and how they can help you in everyday life. So at the end of this lesson, we'll be doing this for 16 sessions. So at the end, you'll be able to apply the 8 limbs, I'm sure you've heard of that before, to daily living and explain them in your own words with real life examples. So we're going to dig into them a little bit more deeply than maybe you have in the past. And we're also going to go through a bunch of different sutras that carry meaning beyond the 8 limbs. So we're going to extend our understanding of the sutras way wider. We're going to cast a wide net beyond the 8 limbs and kind of talk about how you can apply them to your own life and what they mean in the modern day, both for you personally as a yoga teacher and as a yoga practitioner. So we're going to hit all of those three areas of your life and your role as a yogi. And then just a note here, there's going to be questions that you're expected to answer in your notes, and they will appear in this PowerPoint, which is attached as well after every sutra. And so you'll be able to notice them. They'll be in bold and they'll say study questions. So the point of these questions is to kind of take place of a traditional discussion that we would be having. So since we can't talk back and forth about, you know, what we think and how we interpreted it, it's just giving you an opportunity to dig into this more deeply on your own and reflect on it in your own way. So all of these questions are going to just be in the teachable module as well. So you won't have to go back and compare. They're kind of just in here to help you kind of see which questions they correlate with. And then if you want to just be able to use this as a reference later. So that's just kind of something to keep in mind as you go through this. So for our introduction, the Yoga Sutras were written, there's not a clear specific date, but it is estimated around or before 400 CE, so that's around 1700 years ago. Some people say they're as old as 2000 years. So the idea is that these are made up of aphorisms. There's 196. Aphorisms are statements of truth passed down through generations, so that's one of the reasons why it's hard to pick a date when these were written, because, you know, it's something that people had been teaching for a long time through word of mouth and that they had been practicing for a long time. So it's hard to say exactly when it was made up. It's just that Patanjali was the one who really put them all down into words and made it a tangible text that people could use and reference. So the Yoga Sutras are the primary text text of Raja Yoga. So this is not focused on asana or the physical practice, but more mental and spiritual development. So here I'll read this. Raja Yoga itself is an integral approach. It does not simply advocate meditation, but takes into consideration the entire life of a person. Its philosophy is scientific. It welcomes and in fact demands experimental verification by the student. Its ultimate aim is to bring about a thorough transformation of the individual who practices it sincerely. Its goal is nothing less than the total transformation of a seemingly limited physical, mental, and emotional person into a fully illumined, thoroughly harmonized, and perfected being, from an individual with likes and dislikes, pains and pleasures, successes and failures, to a stage of permanent peace, joy, and selfless dedication to the entire creation. So that's a lot to take in, right? So there are some things here that are really interesting. Especially, I really love how they talk about the fact that, you know, being an individual with likes and dislikes, pains and pleasures, successes and failures. And so it's kind of taking into account that we all have our struggles. We all have these pains and pleasures and, you know, we're human. We're not perfect. It does say the word perfect in here, which is also interesting. He says into a thoroughly harmonized and perfected being. But that's kind of where we have to think about this in the context of modern day. And, you know, obviously no one is perfect, but what does perfect look like for you? Or what goals do you want to achieve in your spiritual and mental development? So that's kind of what this is about. And I think that's just a good background to be aware of as you go into this, of what type of yoga this is part of and kind of the whole history of that. So how and why to read the Yoga Sutras? So the sutras is, as Satchitananda says, a manual for transcending all artificial notions of the self and the universe we live in. So the Yoga Sutras is the classic text of yoga theory and practice. So it talks about the inner workings of consciousness, the purpose of creation, and most of all, suffering, and how you can transcend it. So the ultimate goal of this text is to help you remember your truth, remember your true identity, and to kind of push away all of those things that cause suffering. But in order to, you know, be free of that suffering, we have to understand what causes suffering, you know, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And only then can we overcome it. So this book takes us through that journey. So as I mentioned in the beginning, these aphorisms are not just a one-time thing that you read it once and that's it. It's supposed to be something that you can refer to throughout your entire life. And that's what I really love about it, because every time you return to this book, you will be different. You know, even if it's just you read this last month and now you're reading it again, things will have changed, your life will have shifted, and it's going to offer you guidance in new and unexpected ways. And I think that's the whole point of this book, is that it's something you can have as a reference for your entire life and for your spiritual practice. So I think it's just really important to remember that. And I love when he says, you're in a constant state of transformation on an infinite journey towards understanding and harmony, even among all your imperfections. So just going back to that idea, right? We are all imperfect and we are all going to have things that we need to work through, but this is just about embracing that journey and accepting it as just a vital part of the human experience and life itself. So then he goes on to say, truth is one, paths are many. And this is really interesting too, because Satchitananda was really known as a person to bring all of the religions together. So that's what this symbol here is about. I put this here because I love that he talks about, you know, there are so many ways that people can be spiritual seekers and so many ways that people can think of their idea of the divine. And none of it is wrong. You know, all spiritual seekers are essentially working towards the same goal. And that should be a reason to embrace each other and accept one another's path. And there are just so many ways that one can seek out the divine. So So he says, yoga should stand for and exemplify the message of respect for all the different paths, and that all sincere seekers should realize their common spirit and the universality of their goal. So as yogis, we kind of have this sort of responsibility to accept everyone, because we understand this, right? We understand that there is one truth and that we are all working towards it in different ways. We all have had different challenges we've overcome to get to this truth, and we all have, you know, maybe different things that we believe. And I think that's just super important going into this, because there are so many ways to interpret these different teachings, and I'm going to give you a lot of opportunities to explore them in your own way. And most of the questions that I'm going to be answering or asking you to answer, there's no right or wrong answer, except for some of the multiple choice questions. But mostly it's just a chance for you to reflect on this and make it make sense for you in your life. So here we have a couple of questions. So opportunity to reflect on truth is one, paths are many, and how can you embody that as a yoga teacher? And why is it important to keep this in mind when reading the Yoga Sutras? So you don't have to answer this now. You'll come back to this later. You'll have time in the module to finish that. But just to kind of give it context, I put them within the PowerPoint. So the most important thing when we're getting started is to look at the first two, or the second and the third sutras. So the entire four books of the Yoga Sutras are kind of an explanation of what two and three are saying. So Chitta Vritti Niradhana, yoga is the restraint of the modifications of the mind stuff. So here this is breaking it down into the different aspects of this, what each of them means. And so basically, this idea of the mind stuff is the entire outside world. So the outside world is based on your thoughts and mental attitude. So the entire world is your own projection, right? And then he says, as the mind, so the person, bondage or liberation are in your own mind. There's nothing wrong with the world. You can make it a heaven or hell according to your approach. That is why the entire yoga is based on Chitta Vritti Niradhana. If you control your mind, you have controlled everything. Then there is nothing in this world to bind you. So this is just something he continues to come back to again and again throughout the book. Pretty much the whole idea is figuring out ways to modify the mind stuff, how to understand it, how to overcome it, how to work through it, and achieve that bliss on the other side of it. So this is a really important aspect of it. So here we have a couple more questions about what restraint means, what does bondage mean, and then relating that to a thought in your own life. And then also, what does liberation mean, and how does that apply to your own life as well? So next we are going to Yoga Sutra 3. Then the seer, the self, abides in its own nature. So what he's saying is the true you is resting inside while your body and your mind are functioning and moving and interacting with the world. The mind reflects your mirror like a still pond. So the mind must be quiet from distractions, like ripples in the pond, in order to see the true nature of yourself. If the mind has a lot of waves like the surface of the lake, you will see a distorted reflection. So making this analogy between yourself and the pond, and being like looking at your reflection in the pond and the ripples being the distraction that interfere with your vision of yourself. So that's really interesting too, as we go through this, because we are going to talk a lot about how people associate themselves with the external world and with things, with physical traits and things in the material, right? So that's kind of what the ripples in the pond are. When you can't see yourself clearly, then you don't have connection to that true self and what you really are representing. So, and then we have a couple more questions. What the waves represent. So we just went over that, but kind of just putting it into your own words. And then how do you make your mind still? And what does a still mind feel like? So maybe you've experienced this through meditation. Maybe you haven't experienced this. So that's just totally up to you and your experience. So that is it for our introduction, our first day. So you can spend the rest of the time here looking at your questions and answering them. And also, if you have any questions at all for me, and you know, you can always reach out to me on WhatsApp if you have any questions or ideas or you want to talk about something. I'm always available, so definitely please reach out to me. And yeah, that's it. Super excited, and I will see you for the next chapter. We're going to go over the yamas and niyamas next, so I'll see you over there. Bye.